In today's world where we pop a pill for this, take some medicine for that, we're introduced to all sorts of side effects. How about this side effect? Weight gain. Today we have a report on medications that could be making you fat. We also have your questions and the web report, all today on episode number 81 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. My name is Russ Turley, and I am here in Long Beach, California.
And my name is Jeff Ainsley, and I'm 1,600 miles away from you, Russ, all the way in Calgary, Alberta.
Now, for those of you who've been listening to the podcast for these many years, you would recognize that from our first season. That's how we always used to open the show. So a little bit of way back time here on the first part of the show.
Well, you know, Russ, speaking of the first season, that's when you were 68 pounds heavier, because I took a little look ahead and I see that you are 228 pounds, which is awesome. You are truly below the 230s. You're well into that. Having said that, and, you know, getting a little ahead here, how are your eating, exercise, and motivation goals this week?
Well, that is correct. I'm down to 228 pounds. I'm down 1.5 pounds this week, which is a very, very welcome number here, considering last few weeks it's been less than a pound. But let's go with eating goals here. Eating a good 7 out of 10, doing all right there. Exercise goals, a good 10 out of 10, doing my running and getting back into the some weightlifting right now, mostly kind of lower body, a little core work, so doing that. And so overall, my motivation for the week, a good 8 out of 10.
Doing that introduction and how we used to start the podcast when we were, you know, really kind of amateurs at it, it's great to see that we've grown, and it's great to see that you've shrunken as much as we've grown.
Yeah, you know, it's good to look back and you see those numbers, and each week you can look back at our show notes and say, hey, you know, what did I do this week?
But hey, let's move on to our email and comment section.
Yep, and first one here is from Lexi, and she wrote here, thank you both for creating such an amazing show. I've only been listening for a few weeks, and I'm almost caught up with your podcasts. They've been most helpful with rewiring my brain and offered a lot of motivation during my workouts and when I cook. About a year ago, I weighed a frightening 220 pounds at 5'6". I started Weight Watchers and did well with that, dropping to 168, but I didn't really think I'd sustain it. Sure enough, my self-sabotage mindset of everyone else comes first and I deserve to comfort myself got me back to 194. Recently, I decided I needed to make a life change and not diet at all. When I work out now, I tell my partner that I'm going to do my medicine. After all, no one would ever tell you not to take your medicine that is going to help you stay well. How can I rationalize not taking my medicine? I can't. Additionally, I use the momentum I receive from listening to you to get my mother, 240 pounds with two knee replacements, to go to the gym with me and start trying to eat healthy. I even sat down with her and went over her BMR with her, explaining that 1,000 calories a day is a recipe for disastrous binging, which is her norm.
And she continues, that said, I find that I'm having trouble reaching my BMR, which is 2,100 calories. I work out 5 to 6 days a week, 3 days walking, 4.2 miles in Central Park, and 3 days in a gym doing circuit training, elliptical trainer, and cycling, as well as weights. I had set up a Spark People account and was given the goal of 1,250 to 1,500 calories a day. I had since changed it to what I thought was a more reasonable, about 1,600 to 1,700 calories. Even getting that many calories makes me feel as if I'm messing up. Do you have any suggestions to help keep someone feeling positive about his or her food while accepting that 2,100 calories is an acceptable number of calories to eat in a day? I actually find it a bit disheartening. I know that sounds odd. It should be a boon, but it doesn't feel that way. Thank you again for all your information, stories, and humor. My world is much more colorful now that it is full of produce and whole grains and not white bread and cheese.
So Lexi, that's a really good job there, reframing your mind to think of your workout as medicine instead of just a workout. Now, at some point in the future, that workout, it won't just be work, and you won't be thinking of it as medicine. A couple of shows ago, Jeff mentioned the trick of fake it till you make it. Now, you may be faking it right now, but you will have made it there in the future. It will just be a part of who you are, a part of the thinner and healthier Lexi that you've become.
And it seems that lately we've been getting quite a lot of email from people who we have inspired and helped them change their lives. But what has really changed in the last little while is that people are mentioning a lot more that they're passing along our message to others, and that is really rewarding to us. You said that you are using the momentum of what you are doing to pass it on to your mother. If your mother loses 50 or 60 or even 80 pounds in the next couple of years and keeps it off with your help, that is probably the best gift that you could ever give her. Now that you are her new role model as for fitness, that is going to give you more motivation to even keep on doing what you're doing right now.
Now about your food, most people have no idea how much they need to eat. They know their weight, their height, and lots of other stats about themselves. When they aren't dieting, they have no idea the number of calories that they are consuming. They eat fast food or prepackaged foods that are loaded with a massive number of calories and don't think a little bit about how many calories they should be eating. If I had to guess how many calories you were consuming when you were comforting yourself, I would guess it was in excess of 2,100 calories. Yet now, 1,700 calories seems like a lot. There's some sort of disconnect there. It's more difficult to eat the correct number of calories for your body of real food rather than the processed food, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. Eating is medicine as well. If you listen to the show number 80, this last one, and listen to Jamie Oliver, you may in fact be saving your life by eating that real food.
And I just want to add in that feeling guilty about eating the correct number of calories that your body needs is kind of silly if you think about it. The reason that you feel this way is because the only time that people hear about calories in the media is when they're talking about people going on calorie-reduced diets. You hear about diets that range anywhere from 800 to 1,500 calories per day over and over again, but nowhere will people tell you how much you should really be eating to maintain your weight. My first introduction to calories was from a Nutrisystem diet that I went on about 20 years ago. And I remember it was 1,250 calories, which I now know is way too low for any guy to be eating. For several years later, I thought that was the number of calories that you should always be eating when you're on a diet. Every couple of months, the weight would come back on, and I would count calories for those 1,250 to lose the weight again and again and again. I had absolutely no idea about how many calories I should have been eating to maintain my goal weight. After some time, that 1,250 calorie level, that was what I thought constituted a good day, and I felt proud when I only ate that amount. I would feel guilty if I ate more than that. I would feel guilty even if I ate 1,600 or 1,700 calories because I thought anything over 1,250 calories, I would be gaining weight. Now, right now, I still have fluctuations in my weight, and when I notice that it has creeped up a little bit, I pay more attention to my diet and lower my calories a bit. The difference is that now I set my minimum number of calories that I'll ever eat at probably a little over 2,000. When you learn something new, in order to truly grow, you need to let go of those old beliefs. Try and think of why you believe you should be eating fewer calories and where you picked up those beliefs. And I have two positive suggestions for you. Number one, prove it to yourself. Keep a very accurate record of what you are eating and how much you weigh to show yourself that you aren't going to be gaining weight on those calories. And secondly, after a week of eating healthy and never feeling hungry, think to yourself, can you keep this up for the rest of your life? If you can, you can be that fit and healthy person for the rest of your life.
So Lexi, ultimately, here the goal is to eat the most amount of good, healthy food every day. And if you do that, you'll never feel deprived. And again, that's the ultimate goal here.
Well, let's move on to our next email. And this one came in from Allison.
Yep, she wrote here, "Hey guys, just want to say thanks for shedding some light on the subject of eating to lose. I've been listening to your podcast for a while, and the idea of eating like the thinner, healthier you makes sense. I've been doing the point system and bouncing between 3 pounds up and then 3 pounds down. So I said I'm going to try the fat to fit way. So I used your BMR tool and ate within my range, 2,000 calories. So just for fun, I figured out the points for what I ate that day. It came out to 52 points. My goal for the day is 29 with a weekly flex of 35. This all came about when I had eaten a healthy breakfast and lunch, and when logged under the point system, I had used most of my points and it was only 600 to 700 calories. My advice that I would like to pass on, speaking only from my experience, is that the point system pushes you to choose foods that are low in calories, fat, and fiber ratio. Interpreted means air foods and salads. On the point system, you would not eat something that was high in calories because it would be more points. But that same food could be great for your health, i.e. pecans, 14 halves are 5 points, whereas the calories would be 280. which in my opinion is a good snack with some yogurt and is not air food. If points work for someone, great. As for me, I've been converted to a calorie counting, exercising diva. I've lost 3 pounds since I started doing calories instead of points. Hey, who would have thought I needed to eat more? Anyways, thanks for all you do. Keep it up. Healthy person working on coming out. Allison.
Well, first of all, I would probably say that at least 25% of our listener feedback thanks us for allowing them to eat more. And that's really the difference between us and most of these diet plans out there. Now, those are some interesting conclusions that you made, and they make a lot of sense for someone like you, and hopefully some of the people who are following point systems can follow your advice. What I really think about when someone mentions a point system is I think of that old Deal-A-Meal program from Richard Simmons. The same sort of concept. You were probably talking about something like Weight Watchers, but the concepts are still the same. What you've really shown in your email is that you've really moved past that point system, but in reality, some people could be in the opposite situation and find that moving to counting points in a structured program will also work for them. I think that everyone needs to find their own way, and where is that ultimate goal? Well, lately I've been thinking a lot about where our listeners want to be in 5 years. I think that everyone wants to be fit and healthy and not worrying about what they should be eating or how much they should be exercising. They should just be living that healthy lifestyle. And hopefully, they have simply been living that lifestyle since right now. The only way that people are truly going to get there is through education about nutrition and exercise. Some people need to start with some sort of structured diet where everything is planned out for them. Others will need some sort of point system where you choose from foods that have a point value to track what you're eating, and others just learn about nutrition and count calories. You truly need to become comfortable with food and knowledgeable about nutrition. That really is the bottom line. I personally keep a running tally in my head each day about how much I've eaten, and I only eat about 20 or 30 different foods in a week, so it's not that hard for me. Other people who get used to some sort of point system still might keep track of those points in their heads or simply keep eating the healthy food choices that they used to choose from. Other people will just stick with portion sizes and rules of thumb that they've picked up along the way. Other people just have a lot of standard healthy meals that they eat all the time and simply make some food substitutions once in a while. What I'm really trying to get here, and the real point is, it's that once you go through the process of not only learning what a healthy lifestyle is, but living it for a few years, it becomes second nature and easier. All that you have to do then is make sure that you measure yourself once in a while to keep yourself accountable, or make sure that all of your clothes continue to fit. And if you ever think that your dryer is all of a sudden starting to shrink your clothes, well, you're probably wrong. It happens to all of us.
Yes, the magic dryer, just shrinking clothes all over the place. If only that was true. Well, thank you very much, Lexi and Allison, for your questions. If anybody else would like to get a hold of us or ask us a question, there are a few ways to do that. The first is by leaving a comment over on our website at fat2fitradio.com.
Or you can send us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
Third way is to leave a voicemail by clicking on the Call Me button on the website, fattofitradio.com.
Or you can join our support group at fattofitsupport.com.
All right, now we're going to get into the web report. And Jeff has an interesting graphic that he's going to explain to me right now.
Well, what I have this week is an infographic, and it comes from the World Health Organization, and it's entitled Weight of the World. And there's a little introduction to it, and I'll just read through here. It says, approximately two-thirds of the United States' adult population is overweight. This is because, on average, adults in the United States are eating upwards of 3,500 calories a day, when 2,000 calories a day is plenty for an active adult. Both the types of foods and the amount of daily calories an adult chooses to consume can have a significant impact on their health, as you can see by the distribution of calories in diets around the world. And I'll just describe what I'm looking at here. They have a number of countries, and they list the percentage of overweight people in the population, and then they compare the average number of calories that each country is eating and the percentage of their diet that comes from cereal, fruits and vegetables, meats and milk and fish, eggs, fats, sugars, etc. And when you really take a look at the big picture, you can really draw out some correlations and things with more obesity means that people are eating certain things. So for example, if I look at the United States, 3,767 calories are the average amount of calories that are consumed by Americans. 23% comes from cereals. Only 7% of their calories comes from fruit. 24% on average comes from milk. and 39% comes from oils, fats, and sugars. If you look around the other countries in this graphic, the lower the percentage of their calories that come from oils, fats, and sugars, the lower the rates of obesity. And it's really quite clear. The countries that seem to have the lowest rates of obesity tend to be eating more cereals and more fruits and vegetables. And it seems to make a lot of common sense. But when you look at the numbers, you can really see the difference here. If you just didn't know the percentage of obesity and you look at the percentage of what people are eating, it works out. The country here, there's an African country called Eritrea, which averages only 1,700 calories. They only have 13.7% obesity, and majority of their food comes from grains, and they have a lot of fruit and vegetables. It's not really surprising. Countries such as Japan, which are averaging almost 24% obesity, well, they're averaging 2,700 calories, and they're eating a lot of oils, fats, and sugars. Even countries like Sweden, which are almost consuming 3,200 calories, the highest percentage of anything they're getting their calories from right now are oils, fats, and sugars. So I suggest that you come to the website at fattofitradio.com and click on the link that we'll have in the show notes. It is eye-opening. It is really cut and dry. What you eat, how much you eat, affects the obesity rates for everybody. So Russ, what do you have for us this week?
Well, Jeff, you know, I've been doing some running. Before, I did get a new GPS unit that I'm going to be wearing here in the next couple weeks. But before that, I wanted to know how far I had run. I did have my watch on. I knew how long I was running, but I didn't know exactly how far. I could get in my car and I can drive around the neighborhood and see how far I actually ran. But, you know, that's too cumbersome. Meanwhile, there's this great little service called GMaps Pedometer. And what it does is it's a little integration between Google Maps and this custom programming here that they've created. On a Google Map, you can select where you start and your route, and it will tell you how many miles you run or bicycle or whatever you're doing. And it'll actually plot the course along the streets, and you don't have to, you know, really make an intricate detail map. You can kind of click intersections on streets and it'll tell you exactly how far you ran. So it's great because I don't have to worry about keeping track of the miles. I can just say, oh, well, this is how far I ran. I ran for 30 minutes. Now I know I ran 11-minute miles. Awesome. I know I have a point now that I can say, okay, going forward here, I want to get a little bit faster. I want to do 10 minutes and 45 seconds. So without having to have a lot of extra equipment, you just do this with a watch and access to this website, and you've got a lot of great training data for any future workouts.
Yeah, it looks really interesting, and all that you need is an internet connection, and it's free, and you can really zoom in and plan everything. The problem is you might spend a lot of time planning it, not actually end up running as much time as you're planning, but it's really interesting.
Yeah, you know, this is good if you're going to afterward do the run, and then afterwards say, hey, how far did I run? And, you know, Jeff mentioned to me before, said that this function is also available in Google Earth. There's a little measuring tape. But this one takes it a little bit further, and you don't have to really, like, plot along a street and tell it where you turned. It'll do it for you. It'll say, okay, I'm running or I'm bicycling, and it'll just, you put one point here, one point there, and it'll go along the street, the curves all along it, and really makes it simple. There'll be a link in the show notes so you can check it out for yourself and try it out, GMAP Pedometer. But with that, we're going to move on to our feature section for this week, and Jeff's going to be talking about here medicines that can make you fat.
In this section, I'm talking about medications that can potentially make you gain weight. I need to make this clear right at the start. I'm not a doctor or a healthcare professional, and I'm definitely not trying to give any advice as to what anyone should do with their medications. I am simply telling you what the research shows, and if you want real advice about your specific situation and medication options, you need to talk to your doctor or pharmacist because they are the experts on this. Having said that, most people have heard that there are quite a few prescription drugs on the market that have the potential side effect of making people gain weight. I have personally known two people who suffered from mental illness to the extent that they were both hospitalized. Within a year of being medicated with antipsychotic drugs, they had both ballooned up, probably in the range of at least 100 pounds of weight gain. Now, I have always been interested in how this could happen. We always say here on the show that it is just a matter of calories in versus calories out. Is it possible that by taking a certain medication, it could somehow overcome this basic law of energy? Well, if this is true, I wanted to find out how this was possible. Did medications just increase a person's appetite so much that they ate more? Or can it have an impact on the speed of a person's metabolism? Or is there something else that it could be? My wife is a pharmacist, and she helped me considerably in the research of this topic because, to be quite honest, most of what I was reading was above my head and my vocabulary. My goal in this section really is to try and simplify everything and to come to some conclusions about these medications. Now, I'm going to base a lot of this section on some publications from the Therapeutic Research Center. They are a company out of California who produce trade publications for doctors and pharmacists. I can't specifically link to these articles, though, because they are on sites where you have to be a member to see them. If you are a doctor and receive a publication called the Prescriber's Letter, or a pharmacist and subscribe to the Pharmacist's Letter, you will be able to search for articles on drugs that cause weight gain. I'm going to quote a little bit here. Weight gain is a complex process involving both environmental and genetic factors. It is generally a result from an imbalance between energy intake and total energy expenditure. In addition to the many contributing factors to obesity, weight gain associated with drug therapy is becoming an increasing concern. Many drugs have been reported to cause weight gain via different mechanisms. Drugs that commonly cause weight gain include mood stabilizers, antidepressants, anticonvulsants, corticosteroids, and certain diabetes medications. So before I get into the specifics, here are some of the big picture ways that they think these drugs can make people gain weight. Number one, your brain has many neurotransmitters that are associated with controlling your appetite. If you are taking any drugs that work by changing the levels of histamine, dopamine, or serotonin in your brain, they are shown to stimulate appetite and make you much more hungry. The second way, certain antihistamines that you might take have sedative effects and make you feel sluggish and lazy. And just by decreasing your regular activity and not burning as many calories each day, this leads people to gain some weight. And the third mechanism, there are certain drugs that have the side effect of making people more thirsty, and many of those people end up drinking more high-caloric drinks that makes them gain weight. I'm going to go over those main types of drug classes that might cause you to gain weight. Almost everyone will end up taking some of these drugs at some point in their life, so it is important. I guess it would be possible that you could be on a combination of drugs that hits you from all angles and then makes managing your weight extremely difficult. I'm not going to go over every single specific drug. I'm just going to stick with the main categories of what the drugs do. I'll also try not to mention too many drug names, because if I tell you the chemical names, it won't make sense to almost anyone, and if I tell you the common drug names, it also won't make sense to our international listeners, because different countries have different trade names for those same drugs. The most common class of drugs that people take are the birth control pills, and depending on what you take, it may or may not be associated with weight gain. Oral contraceptives can cause a little weight gain by the retention of fluids and increasing your appetite. It isn't associated with any real significant chance of weight gain, maybe a pound or two, and if you take low-dose products, you shouldn't expect any weight gain at all. There is, however, one form of female birth control that shows a higher likelihood of weight gain. This is the injection that lasts 3 months and is commonly known as Depo Provera. This has been shown to increase appetite, but this doesn't mean that you have to give in to your increased appetite and overeat. Planning out your meals in advance is one of the best ways to deal with this. The next most commonly prescribed drugs are antidepressants. A quick Google search turned up that about 10% of Americans are on antidepressants right now, so this is a huge concern. There are a few antidepressants that are not associated with weight gain, but most seem to be. If they are tricyclic antidepressants or monoamine oxidase inhibitors, you will generally put on more weight the higher the dosage that you are taking. What seems to happen is that these people get an increase in appetite and cravings for carbohydrates and sweets. The more common antidepressants are in the category called SSRIs, or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which are more commonly prescribed, and the good news is that they are more unlikely to cause you to gain weight. Your doctor or pharmacist will be able to tell you what specifically you are taking and the potential side effects. There are actually some antidepressants that are associated with weight loss. For example, there is a drug called bupropion. it is commonly prescribed as either Wellbutrin or Zyban. If you take bupropion for depression, it will most likely be called Wellbutrin. If you take bupropion to help you stop smoking, it will most likely be called Zyban. It's exactly the same drug chemically, but gets marketed as two different drugs. I threw this in there because I just thought that was an interesting fact that I learned. The bottom line with antidepressants is that they increase cravings, but with goal setting and disciplined eating, it is not a guarantee that you will have to gain weight, any more than living next door to a pizza place is a guarantee that you'll gain weight. Moving along, there are drugs that are used as mood stabilizers. These can be used to treat things like bipolar disorder or other types of mental illness. The most common drug that you might hear about is lithium. Lithium is one drug where it is fairly likely that you will gain weight. Studies show that after 2 years of treatment, the majority of people gain between 11 to 33 pounds of weight. However, not all people put on that drug will gain weight. It is associated with a dramatic increase in appetite and thirst in some people, but believe it or not, diet regulation and exercise has been shown to help in the studies, just what we've always been talking about on this show. Now, the next drugs that I'm going to talk about are used to treat schizophrenia. Schizophrenia is a mental illness that is treated with antipsychotic drugs. They are thought to cause dramatic weight gain by a combination of three different things. Firstly, they are very sedative and make you sluggish and sleepy. Then they tend to slow down your metabolic rate, and then finally, they increase your appetite. It isn't a good combination, and these factors definitely can cause weight gain in most people who take antipsychotic drugs. The two people that I talked about earlier who gained a lot of weight were taking antipsychotics. 15 to 20 years after their bouts with mental illness, their weights are back down and they are now healthy. This is one instance where I personally believe, and this is just my opinion, that you should take a medication even if it is likely that you will put on some weight. Deal with becoming mentally healthy first. You will then have the rest of your life to live a healthy lifestyle and your weight will come back off. The last of the types of drugs that I'm going to briefly talk about are hypoglycemics, which are used to help control diabetes. The ones that are known as insulin sensitizers reduce insulin resistance in the liver and other cells and can be associated with fluid retention and the increased storage of fat. Now, after all of this, the vast majority of all medications that might cause the average person to gain weight does not necessarily have to cause weight gain. Here is the suggestion of what to do if you believe that weight gain is caused by medications, and I'll first quote it in Dr. E's. The first step in managing clinical relevant drug-induced weight gain is to consider switching to another agent in the same class associated with less weight gain if possible. If discontinuing the offending drug is not possible, behavioral modification and dietary modification with increased physical activity should be considered. So what they are saying, number one, talk to your doctor about switching medications. Number two, set some fitness goals, watch who you eat, and exercise. The bottom line of this whole section is that medications can be a challenge for people and make losing fat or maintaining your weight harder, but they ultimately can't make you gain weight if you don't overeat. The law of calories in versus calories out still applies here. Some drugs can increase your desire to eat, but you ultimately are responsible for what goes in your mouth. What I really want to leave people with is that we all have challenges in our life that make it harder to be healthy and fit. Some of us don't have a good support system in our lives. Some of us have genetics that work against us. Some of us even have stressful jobs and fight daily not to use food for comfort. Medications are just another challenge that can be overcome.
No, it's very interesting. You know, it's good to know that if, you know, I do have a problem in the future, that taking one of these drugs is not a death sentence, that just by eating better and exercising, I don't have to gain weight if I'm taking one of these pills. And right now, you know, I am guilty of taking, you know, ibuprofen and Aleve on a semi-regular basis just for any aches and pains. So that's just really good to know for the future.
Well, Russ, I know you don't have to worry about Aleve or ibuprofen. I didn't see any of that in the research when I was reading through. But what do you have for the recipe this week?
Well, we had an email come in from listener Jeff, and he sent us a link to a little video and a description of super oatmeal. Now, this was created by Bob, and forgive the name here, C. Bohar It's a former U.S. Olympic triathlon team nutritionist. And this video and recipe shows how he creates his super oatmeal that he gives to the athletes here on the Olympic triathlon team. And I watched the video and I could not believe all the things he put in there. It looked delicious. Let me give you a list of the ingredients. Rolled oats and water, whey protein powder, dark cocoa powder, ground flax, blueberries, raisins, and or a banana. And but that sounds good. Oh, I couldn't believe he added the cocoa powder. I was watching the video. I thought, that's genius. Just a big, giant spoon of cocoa powder in your oatmeal. And he did that one for the antioxidants. And what a great idea, you know. And he mentioned, as an athlete, antioxidants are very important. I thought, I'm going to do it. So I am eating super oatmeal this weekend.
And the one thing that I found fascinating about the video, he's doing this, it looks like, in a hotel room. So they're eating this right on the road and preparing it in their hotel rooms.
That's right. He had a hot plate and he said you can prepare all the dry ingredients together before you go on the road, and yeah, sends them out for a competition with this to eat before they train or they go on that triathlon or other competition. So that's amazing. And it was really simple too. I mean, you wouldn't think that something with this many ingredients would be that simple. But you know, if you have them all there in your house ready to go, throw them together, and it's a great, delicious, and nutritious breakfast. But Jeff, enough about oatmeal. What do we have for homework this week?
Everyone who listens to this show has probably picked up dozens of little weight loss tips and tricks, and it's easy to give other people advice. If you only had 1 minute to tell someone the 5 most important things to do to be successful at weight loss, what would they be? Write down those 5 things, and after you've written them down, what percentage of time do you follow your own advice? That's just something to think about.
Yeah, it's kind of a do as I say, not as I do kind of a thing. And it's a good advice.
Well, I think we're all guilty of that at some point.
Yes, exactly. So, Jeff, what is our quote for this week?
Well, the quote comes from Elmer G. Letterman, and it is, "A man may fall many times, but he won't be a failure until he says someone pushed him."
All right, it's a good quote, and I want to thank everyone for participating in the show, for sending in those emails and those comments and a recipe this week. Thank you for that. In particular, all the show notes and all the links that we talked about here on today's show will be at the website at fat2fitradio.com. Just look for show number 81. With that, we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast@fattofitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fattofitradio.com. If you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.